tell the masters no more. And this is Nighthawk, and I say, for myself, no more. Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, because the freedom is slipping away.
When you attend a funeral, it is sad to think that sooner or later those you love will do the same for you. And you may have thought it tragic, not to mention other adjectives, to think of all the weeping they will do. But don't you worry, no more ashes, no more sackcloth, and an armband made of black cloth will someday nevermore adorn a sleeve. For if the bomb that drops on you gets your friends and neighbors too, there'll be nobody left behind to grieve, and we will all go together when we go. What a comforting fact that is to know. Universal bereavement, an inspiring achievement. Yes, we all will go together when we go. We will all go together when we go. All suffused with an incandescent glow. No one will have the endurance to collect on his insurance. Lloyd's of London will be loaded when they go. We will all fry together when we fry. We'll be French fried potatoes by and by. There will be no more misery when the world is our rotisserie. Yes, we all will fry together when we fry. We will all bake together when we bake. There'll be nobody present at the wake. With complete participation in that grand incineration, nearly 3 billion hunks of well-done steak. We will all char together when we char. And let there be no moaning of the bar. Just sing out a te deum when you see that ICBM, and the party will be come as you are.
Come as you are indeed. I'm so delighted to have my producer, Mitchell Buck, back in the studio. It's wonderful to have him here. His internet connection was wiped out by a fierce storm in Virginia. A number of us were very concerned, and we're greatly relieved to have him back. Now, we were unable to take a lot of calls last time, only a few got through, but we'll definitely be taking calls the second hour today. I'll give you an update on some of the latest developments regarding the COVID pandemic and other political developments here and abroad, and then be glad to field your questions during the second half. We begin with the CDC confirming the remarkably low death rate from COVID-19. It turns out most people are more likely to wind up 6 feet under because of almost anything else under the sun than COVID-19. The CDC just came out with a report that ought to be earth-shattering to the narrative of the political class, yet you're not going to hear a word from it. I'll bet none of you have heard anything about this. For the first time, the CDC has attempted to offer a real estimate of the overall death rate for COVID-19. And under its most likely scenario, the number is 0.26. Let me give you a comparison rate. In Italy, with that staggering number of deaths, when they sorted out those who had pre-existing conditions, such as diabetes, high blood pressure, and heart disease, there was only 1% that remained. And when they studied the death rate within that 1%, it was 0.8, which is even lower than the 0.9, which is the average death rate from all causes combined worldwide. So when we get down to 0.26, we're talking about a pretty small number, not as small, of course, as the California physicians from Bakersfield discovered, where when they did their very extensive study, it turned out that the chance of dying from COVID in California was 0.03. They had to repeat it several times. 0.03. And even then, there were reporters with a clear bias who wanted to do everything they could to dispute what these physicians were very reasonably estimating. Until now, we've been told the death rate was supposed to be on the order of 3.4% from the World Health Organization, which helped to drive the panic and the lockdowns. But now the CDC is agreeing to the lower rate in plain ink. Very welcome. Lots of statistics to accompany it, which you can check out when you watch the video version of the show. The rate is lower, even lower, because numerous studies and hard counts of confined population have shown a much higher percentage of asymptomatic cases. People who have the virus but are showing no symptoms may never show any symptoms, meaning they have the virus, but they don't have the disease. Simply adjusting for a 50% asymptomatic rate would drop the fatality rate to 0.2, exactly the rate of fatality Dr. John Ioannidis of Stanford University projected, where he is among the very few very competent physicians who are giving us completely reliable reports. The overall death rate, however, is meaningless because the numbers are so lopsided. Given at least half of the deaths were in nursing homes, a back-of-the-envelope estimate would show the infection fatality rate for non-nursing residents would be only 0.1 or 1 in 1,000. And that includes persons of all ages, all health statuses outside of nursing homes, since nearly all of the deaths are those with comorbidities, meaning multiple causes of death. To put this into perspective, one Twitter commentator juxtaposed the age-separated infection fatality rate in Spain to the average yearly probability of dying of anything for the same age group based on data from the Social Security Administration. He used Spain because we don't have a detailed infection fatality rate for each age group from any survey in the U.S. We know, however, that Spain fared far worse than most any other country. Just to put it ultimately in perspective, actually, if you're an adult, your chances of dying from COVID are about the same as dying from being hit by an automobile. And if you're a child, your chance of dying from COVID is approximately equal to your chance of dying from being struck by lightning. It's completely that absurd. Nevertheless, the deep state continues its propaganda campaign, including against hydroxychloroquine, which, as we have reported several times in the past, was vindicated by studies published already in the journal Virology of the National Institutes of Health back in 2005, meaning that Dr. Tony the Rat Fauci has known since at least 2005 that hydroxychloroquine is virtually a miracle cure for coronavirus, stops it dead in its tracks. It's both a cure and a preventative, which has been very thoroughly documented. This drug has been around for 35, 40 years. The mainstream media goes out of its way to try to attack Trump for advocating HCQ, but he's doing exactly the right thing. Meanwhile, the World Health Organization said Monday it was temporarily suspending clinical trials of HCQ as a potential treatment as a precautionary measure based on the publication of a study in The Lancet, which indicated that using the drug on COVID-19 patients could increase their likelihood of dying and even make their lifespan shorter, which is frankly completely absurd. What I find so profoundly disturbing is that The Lancet is the oldest medical journal in the world. The oldest medical journal in the world is publishing false information that could affect the lives of millions who might be inhibited from taking hydroxychloroquine under the false belief that it's going to make them worse off rather than better. This report goes on to explain that hydroxychloroquine is normally used to treat arthritis, but pronouncements from public figures, including President Trump, have prompted governments to buy the medicine in bulk. Brazil's health minister, for example, recommended last week using hydroxychloroquine as well as the anti-malarial chloroquine to treat even mild COVID-19 cases, which is the right thing to do. In fact, it turns out hydroxychloroquine is a mild derivative of chloroquine, which has been vindicated and indeed was so in that study in virology in 2005. Now, The Lancet, incredibly, and I mean literally, this is not reasonable to believe, found that both drugs can produce potentially serious side effects, particularly heart arrhythmia, as well as that neither drug benefited patients hospitalized with COVID-19. Wow, that's just astounding. We had a French physician right off the bat who had 80 patients so severely afflicted that they were hospitalized. When he gave them the drug, hydroxychloroquine, 79 of them survived. We had another U.S. physician with 350 patients. He gave them all hydroxychloroquine. None of them had to be hospitalized. None of them died. We have a New York doctor with 500 patients, gave hydroxychloroquine with this antibiotic, the Z-Pak and zinc. All 500 survived. I mean, it is going to be a matter, ultimately, I believe, of lawsuits for a journal to be this irresponsible. Frankly, The Lancet has discredited itself permanently as an authoritative journal. Very, very embarrassing. I'm looking at the article by Brian Fisher, which was quite concise, clear, and brilliant, who explains that the Virology Journal, the official publication of Dr. Fauci's National Institutes of Health, published what is now a blockbuster article on August 22, 2005, under the heading, get ready for this, chloroquine is a potent inhibitor of SARS coronavirus infection and spread. The researchers reported that it has inhibitory effects when the cells are treated with the drug either before or after exposure, suggesting both prophylactic and therapeutic advantage. This means, of course, that Dr. Fauci has known for more than 15 years, at least 15 years, that chloroquine and its even milder derivative, hydroxychloroquine, will not only treat a current case of coronavirus therapeutic, but prevent future cases that prophylactic. So HCQ functions as both a cure and a vaccine without a needle. In other words, it's a wonder drug for coronavirus. You know, how many more would have thrived and survived? Nobody had to die, and Tony the Rat has known it forever. Meanwhile, we have Bill Gates at the center of everything, providing vast sums of money to the various organizations that are related to health, including $4.3 million to the World Health Organization, $155 million to the CDC, $18 million to NIH, and the one that really stunned me, $280 million to Imperial College London, where Neil Ferguson developed his apocalyptic pandemic model, estimating that 2.2 million Americans would die and 500,000 Brits if the country weren't shut down, where Fauci, alas, was able to persuade the president, who acted in what he believed was the best interest of the American people by shutting down the economy. We know now that the consequences are overwhelmingly worse from the shutdown than they would be from the coronavirus, which represents a very modest threat. Here we have Hillary Clinton says lockdown protesters are domestic terrorists. Let me repeat that. Hillary Clinton says lockdown protesters are domestic terrorists. This woman is a monster. This woman is pathetic. This woman is a sadist. This woman is preoccupied with one and only one person in the world, and that's Hillary Clinton. Look how unselfish it was of the president of the United States, knowing full well that the greatest assets an incumbent president can have in seeking re-election is a robust economy and a soaring stock market. He sacrificed both of those benefits for the sake of the American people. I think at this point now he realizes he was played and he's going to do his best to get the economy back and moving again, where the American people seem to be responding, because he has been receiving the highest approval ratings he's ever received, and where he has, by the latest poll that I regard as trustworthy, leading Joe Biden in the 15 battleground states. Meanwhile, just to demonstrate the absurdity of Hillary's position, study, lockdown will destroy at least 7 times more years of human life than it saves. I mean, this is really fascinating. Based on a broad array of scientific data, Just Facts has computed that the anxiety created by reactions to COVID-19, such as stay-at-home orders, business shutdowns, media exaggerations, and legitimate concerns about the virus, will destroy at least 7 times more years of human life than can possibly be saved by lockdowns to control the spread of the disease. The figure is a bare minimum. The actual, likely more than 90 times greater. 90 times greater. Research shows that at least 16.8% of adults in the U.S. have suffered major mental harm from responses to COVID-19. Extrapolating those numbers out, the figures show that anxiety from responses to COVID-19 has impacted 42,873,663 adults and will deprive them of an average of 1.3 years of life apiece, thus destroying 55.7 million years of life. This contrasts with a maximum of 616,590 lives, which might be saved by the current lockdown, while the disease robs an average of 12 years of life from each of its victims, which means the current lockdown can save no more than 7.4 million years of life. 7 times figure is a massively conservative estimate that minimizes the impact of the negative consequences of lockdown and maximizes the number of lives affected by the lockdown. Meanwhile, as we have been reporting here, Politico admits Democrats dread a fast economic rebound. The general election scenario that Democrats are dreading, the Politico headline reads. And what is that scenario? We are about to see the best economic data we've seen in the history of this country. A former economic advisor to Barack Obama told a bunch of bigwigs from both parties last month. His name is Jason Furman. And Politico says he laid out a detailed case for why the month preceding the November election could offer Trump the chance to brag truthfully about the most explosive monthly employment numbers and GDP growth ever. Furman's counterintuitive pitch has caused some Democrats, especially Obama alumni around Washington, to panic. "This is my big worry," said a former Obama White House official still close to the former president. Asked about the level of concern among top party officials, he said it's high, 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 high. And top policy officials on the Biden campaign are preparing for a fall economic debate that might look very different than the one predicted at the start of the pandemic in March. They are very much aware of this, said an informal advisor. What Furman already sees are signs of what's known as a V recovery, as opposed to a slower, gradual recovery, or a recovery that takes a while to get back to where we were before the stupid lockdowns began. Furman sees an economy that's already unleashed. "Consumption and hiring started to tick up in gross terms, not in net," Furman said, describing the phenomenon as a partial rebound. "The bounce back can be very, very fast because people go back to their original job, they get called back from furlough. You put the lights back on in your business. Given how many people were furloughed and how many businesses were closed, you can get a big jump out of that. It will look like a V." Furman's argument is not that different from the one made by White House economic advisors and Trump himself, who have predicted an explosive third quarter. And senior advisor Jared Kushner has said in late April, the hope is that by July, the country's really rocking again. White House officials were thrilled to hear some of their views have been endorsed by prominent Democrats. While no one expects the second quarter numbers, which will tell us the GDP massively fell between April 1st and June 30th, to be anything but terrible, if we can come to our senses nationwide and get these absurd lockdowns behind us, the third quarter numbers that will be released at the end of September could show real growth. This would be good for the incumbent president, especially since that president has been predicting a pent-up desire within American people to get back to normal, no doubt about it. Now, we had a bit of a tragedy, clearly preventable, in Minneapolis, Minnesota. Four cops have been fired after one kept his knee on the neck of a black man who had already been subdued, was already handcuffed on the ground, was protesting, couldn't breathe for 5 minutes. Now, even the cop had to know the rule of threes. You can live 3 minutes without air, 5 days without water, 3 days without water, and 3 weeks without food. But 5 minutes, no. And of course, he died from it. Now, I've seen a lot of footage, including footage when he was first apprehended. He was a very big guy. I'm going to guess he might have been as 6'5", 6'7". But there was absolutely no necessity to perform this technique. I've been informed by Mike Barra, with whom I'm doing daily CV updates with him and Dean Ryan, and have been for more than 2 months now, we've done over 60 of these, that this knee on the neck is a technique the police learned from the Israelis, where our police forces, I regret this profoundly, have been sent to Israel for training, where the Israelis are teaching U.S. cops to treat American citizens the way the Israeli cops treat Palestinians, which is with brutality, with ruthlessness, with no compassion. This is not only terrible, but I believe the consequences politically are going to be devastating. I mean, Minnesota has been a very important state in national elections. We've had now black rioting in protest. The police brought out SWAT teams firing rubber bullets and tear gas. I do not see how the Democrats can possibly expect to carry Minnesota after these brutal techniques. And of course, being applied to one of their most vital constituencies, black Americans. Indeed, I believe, if you go back to late December, that part of the reasons the Democrats decided to throw in on this mass pandemic and support it, now stretch out the lockdowns as long as they can, was because there was polling showing that up to 40% of black Americans were going to support Donald Trump. Now, there's no way Democrats can win elections with a significant percentage of blacks voting for their opponent. And of course, they were doing so for very good reason. Trump had so improved the economy that for a change, the rising economy was lifting all boats. In fact, it was the lowest paying wages that were rising at the fastest rate. And the fact that he was cutting off immigration from the southern border meant they were retaining their ability to keep their jobs rather than have them undercut by low wage workers coming across a border where the Democrats would just as soon have totally open borders. This is just part and parcel of the insanity of the policies the Democrats have pursued. Well, I think the blacks, black Americans, in very large numbers, aren't going to take it any longer, very appropriately. Much more to come here. But I believe this is going to be a decisive event in November, and the Democrats aren't going to be happy with the outcome. Meanwhile, Trump tweet throws House vote on government surveillance powers into doubt. A House vote to reauthorize national security surveillance authorities. This is through the FISA courts, which we know were seriously played to bring about all the spying by the FBI and the Department of Justice into the Trump campaign, which was all done under the supervision of the Obama administration up to and including Barack Obama himself, where Susan Rice, his national security advisor, signed the authorization for the the British equivalent of the CIA to conduct spying on Trump administration officials. I mean, this is like the most politically sordid event in American history. So this renewal of the FISA surveillance ability had already passed the Senate. I think Trump was unaware it was taking place, and when he caught wind of it, he ran a tweet, President Trump, Tuesday evening, this being Wednesday, yesterday, urged House Republicans to vote against a surveillance bill that will be brought to the floor this week after lawmakers reached an agreement to vote on a key provision. I hope all Republican House members vote no on FISA until such time as our country is able to determine how and why the greatest political, criminal, and subversive scandal in USA history took place, Trump tweeted, referring to the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act. I agree with Trump 100%. His tweet comes after months of speculation whether he would support the bill less than a day before it's scheduled to get a vote on the House floor. That's today, throwing an 11th-hour curveball into its path, where the Senate had passed the legislation in a bipartisan vote a month ago. It might have been better if he took a stand earlier. I believe even if it passes, Trump will veto the bill and that they will be unable to override his veto. Meanwhile, as the U.S. nears 100,000 pandemic deaths, and frankly, the actual number is closer to 75,000 that have been reported as being COVID 19 deaths. But as you'll recall, Senator Scott Jensen from Minnesota, who's also a physician, explained how he was asked to identify a decedent as a COVID 19 patient, even though he'd never been tested. And persons working in medical examiner's office are also likewise reporting that they're being asked to identify victims of suicide and murder as COVID 19 patients. So none of these numbers are significant. This is a political pandemic, not a medical emergency. And out of desperation, I mean, I have here the Wisconsin State Journal, which at one time I thought was a worthy newspaper. I no longer do. Here's their heading. Trump's empathy questioned as death near 100,000. Well, I've been giving you all kinds of comparative data, such as for the first quarter. There were like 40,000 alleged deaths from COVID-19, but 120,000 due to the seasonal flu. And we just had a report here from the CDC that for adults, the risk is about equal to or less than for the seasonal flu. And for children, 0 to 17, it's virtually non-existent. So how is Trump being non-empathetic? I mean, this is just ridiculous. They're scraping the bottom of the barrel. This is the best that Democrats can do, and it's frankly absurd. In the rubble of building in lives, right, the Associated Press, modern U.S. presidents have met national traumas with words such as these. I can hear you. You have lost too much, but you have not lost everything. We have wept with you. We pulled our children tight. As diverse as they were in eloquence and empathy, George W. Bush, Bill Clinton, and Barack Obama each had his own way of piercing the noise of catastrophe and reaching people. But now, the known death toll from the coronavirus pandemic is fast approaching 100,000 on the watch of a president whose communication skills, potent in a political brawl, are not made for this moment. Impeachment placed one indelible mark on Donald Trump's time in the White House. Now there is another still growing American casualty list that has exceeded deaths from the Vietnam and Korean wars combined with U.S. fatalities from the most lethal hurricanes and earthquakes pale from comparison. This is the deadliest pandemic in the century. Well, that's complete bullshit. It isn't. Virtually all the others have been more significant. So, you know, fake news, fake news, fake news. Unbelievable. And we've reported a whole lot of it here. By the way, on Sunday, the debut of The Conspiracy Guy at jimtheconspiracyguy.com, I gave a very comprehensive overview of the coronavirus plandemic, this complete political scam I contrast the two hypotheses, whether it's real or whether it's fake, and laid out the available evidence and assess the relative strength and support for the two alternative hypotheses on the basis of the probability of the available evidence if they were true, and the probability of the available evidence if it were a bona fide coronavirus pandemic is almost zero. But the probability of it's fake, for all the available evidence, including faking all these statistics, having empty hospitals, having minimal mortality, ordinary mortality rates across the European countries and so forth, is very high. So I'm going to have that now made available, and I'll get it up and out and about and let you know where you can check it out. My next event, the second episode of The Conspiracy Guy, which is 10 to midnight Central Time, so it's 8 to 10 Pacific, 11 to 1 a.m. Eastern, this coming Sunday will be on the moon landing hoax. And I got to say, as I mentioned during the show on Sunday, I always thought the moon landing hoax would be the biggest scam ever perpetrated on the world, but no, it's vastly exceeded by what's taken place here and now. Meanwhile, Dr. Reelwin, who has the wonderful Fellowship of the Mind's blog, end the COVID-19 lockdown. Georgia Governor Brian Kemp proved right. And by the way, Trump has put it to the North Carolina governor, who's a Democrat, in keeping the state locked down, asking for assurances that it will be possible to hold the Republican convention there in person, to which he has received no response, where Georgia Governor Kemp has offered to have the convention held in Georgia, which my frank opinion is that would be a great idea because Georgia's opened up and North Carolina is not. And whereas the statistics comparing 10 Democrat states with a population of 100 million with 10 Republican states with a population of 100 million, it turns out that there have been 70,000 plus deaths in the Democrat states and fewer than 10,000 in the Republican. Something's terribly wrong here, which is that the lockdown, the face mask, social distancing, this is all very, very bad for the human body and diminishes your immune system and puts you at severe risk. It's all a bad idea. Meanwhile, as Dr. Ewan presents, Georgia's Republican Governor Brian Kemp was widely criticized for his decision to end the state COVID-19 lockdown and reopen for business, but he's been proven to be right. As you can see in the Georgia Department of Public Health graph below, ending the lockdown did not lead to a spike in COVID-19 cases. On the contrary, the number of confirmed COVID-19 cases actually plunged after the reopening on April 30th. And although the number of COVID-19 cases began climbing up again on May 9th, the second wave did not reach the heights of the first and quickly dropped to below the lowest point on April 30th. Now, let me explain about this so-called second wave. When you stay at home and socially distance and wear face masks, you're actually weakening your immune system. Strong, healthy immune systems require interaction with other human beings, lots of fresh air, lots of sunlight, getting out and about. And of course, as I've explained before, wearing a mask recycles your oxygen depleted CO2. Recycling into your system does not reoxygenate the red blood cells that go to your various cells, including your brain cells, which means by wearing a mask, you're actually killing your brain cells. Where I reiterate my prediction that post the pandemic, the average IQ across America will have dropped 5 points. As reported by Reuters, Azar, that's the U.S. Health Secretary, Alex Azar, said on May 17th that authorities are not seeing spikes in coronavirus cases in places that are reopening, but are seeing increases in some areas that remain closed. What I wanted to add was the following. the idea of a second spike actually would be what you would anticipate of people who have been staying at home, social distancing, and wearing face masks. They have weakened their immune system so that threats in the environment, whether they're viral, fungal, or bacterial, may affect them adversely because of their reduced immune systems from the lockdown. In other words, everything about this lockdown business is wrong. All of it's wrong. And you want substantial documentation, check out my blogs. I have over 24 blogs now at jamesfetzer.org that are addressing coronavirus. And they're very thoroughgoing and devastating to what's been taking place. Kemp's decision to end Georgia's lockdown is supported by a new study by 12 scientists from the Cornell University, University of Rochester Medical Center, and Lancaster University, which found that social distancing did not reduce the number of daily confirmed COVID cases, but merely stabilized the spread of the disease. Even the United Nations International Children's Educational Fund has changed its tune. The Telegraph reported on May 13th that Dr. Stephen Peterson, chief of health at UNICEF, warned that lockdowns can actually kill more than COVID-19. The risk of children dying from malaria, pneumonia, or diarrhea in developing countries is spiraling and far outweighs any threat presented by the coronavirus. Meanwhile, and I was really kind of floored to find this published in Sputnik, some Americans believe in Bill Gates' alleged involvement in COVID-19 plot, poll shows. Anti-vaccine campaigners, and I would add truth seekers worldwide, have repeatedly accused Bill Gates of being involved. Here they say in conspiracy theories, but that's just dumb. Not of being involved in conspiracy theory, being involved in conspiracy pertaining to the coronavirus pandemic. The Microsoft co-founder, meanwhile, has contributed millions to the development of a COVID-19 vaccine and testing as part of global efforts to fight the virus. Well, remember, Bill Gates, this guy is not a doctor. This guy is not a scientist. This guy's not a virologist. He's not an epidemiologist. He's a computer geek who inherited a fortune, and he treats vaccines as a business. He wants to vaccinate the whole world, and he's openly admitted that it would bring about a minimal estimated 700,000 deaths, when worldwide we haven't seen half of that from COVID. So his cure for the COVID is to kill more than twice as those that would maximally be expected to die from the disease. If that isn't the sign of a psychopath, I can't imagine what would be. More than 40%, and you see the propaganda line here, of self-described Republicans and Fox News viewers. What the hell does being a Fox News viewer or even being a Republican, although I know they might use these categories for poll purposes, believe in a conspiracy theory that Microsoft co-founder Bill Gates planned to use a future COVID-19 vaccine to implant microchips in billions of people and monitor their movements? A new Yahoo News YouGov poll has revealed. Well, that's right. That's right. And there's a huge amount about it. Go on to my blog. You'll find it. I mean, look, here's a perfect study of it. COVID vaccine. What else could they put in the shot by John Rappaport? This guy is completely brilliant, totally original, clear thinker. I'll read you some highlights. There's never been a greater opportunity to deploy one vaccine against so many people. So it's certainly not out of line to consider a dual use. I have already covered the devastating effects of experimental RNA, DNA vaccine technologies, both of which could be launched with a COVID vaccine. Putting that aside for the moment, could the vaccine serve another purpose? In this article, I raise questions. Questions about the potential covert use of nanotechnology in the COVID vaccine. From lexico.com, nanotechnology, the branch of technology that deals with dimensions and tolerances of less than 100 nanometers, especially the manipulation of individual atoms and molecules. Are researchers interested in marrying nanotechnology and vaccines? You bet they are. Here are some astonishing quotes from the journal Nano Today from a 2019 paper titled Nano Wire Probes Could Drive High-Resolution Brain-Machine Interfaces. Its authors are Chinese and American. Quote, advances can enable investigations of dynamics in the brain through nanosensor implants and drive the development of new brain-machine interfaces with unprecedented resolution and precision. Another, output electrical signals of brain activity or input electrical stimuli to modulate brain activity in concert with external machines, including computer processors and prosthetics for human enhancement. Aside from research into prosthetics and perhaps the reversal of certain paralyses, this avenue of investigation suggests modulation of the brain remotely connected to machines for the purpose of control. Modulation, such as control of basic thought impulses, sensations, emotions, he ought to add actions. One, nanosensors implanted in the body and brain would issue real-time data reports on body-brain functioning to op centers. Two, and from those op centers, data, including instructions, would be sent back to the nanosensors, which would impose those instructions on the brain and body. If this seems impossible, consider nanotech research aimed at improving the use of prosthetics in that field. Imposing instructions on the body brain appears to be the whole point. The question is, how far along the road of development is this technology? I can only say we are seeing the public published face of nanotechnology. What lies behind it in secret research is a matter for estimated and speculations. I offer one speculation: the promotion of the social agenda of collectivist thought through nanotech, utilizing the Internet of Things, an attempt would be made to hook up and harmonize many, many brains with one another. Same basic feelings, same impulses, share. He says, who would be interested in such a program? Think Chinese government. Think DARPA, the technology arm of the Pentagon. Think numerous other international actors. Think Rockefeller Medical Research. Think technocracy and Brave New World. I'll tell you what I think is going on here, because it's, to me, highly disconcerting. Among my various accomplishments was founding an international journal named Minds and Machines quite a long time ago. It's proven to be a complete success, some kind of bonanza, devoted to artificial intelligence, philosophy, and cognitive science. Many experts in the field told me that I'd put together the best editorial board of any journal they'd ever seen. And I knew that was correct because I'd been very deliberate going about it, recognizing that the quality of your editorial board really determines the standing, the fate of your journal. Well, it's very interesting because I published many, many articles that were arguing about how to develop digital machines into thinking things. My own position, however, has been a systematic critique of that approach, boiled down into a nutshell, because all the strings of data, all the high and low voltage zeros and ones that can be arranged in endless combinations, don't mean anything for the machines that are processing them. They don't mean anything. They don't stand for anything. What that means is that these machines, no matter how sophisticated, even if you can make them simulate the behavior of human beings, are incapable of thought. Human beings, however, are the possessors of thought who process what are technically known as signs, which are things that stand for other things in some respect or others, where the great American philosopher Charles S. Peirce, whom I regard as being the only great American philosopher, distinguish between three basic kinds of signs: icons, which look like, smell like, taste like, they resemble what they stand for, which could include paintings, photographs, diagrams, maps, and so forth, presuming that they bear resemblance relations, typically to scale and so forth. So we're talking about really representations that are by and large realistic as opposed to alternative variations, indices, causes or effects of that for which they stand, just as ashes and smoke are signs for fire, fire for heat, for ashes for smoke, elevated red dots in a temperature for measles, indicating that in some cases the signs are only discernible by an expert, in this case a physician, and symbols, which are merely habitually associated with that for which they stand. Notice the word horse, H-O-R-S-E, doesn't look like a large four-legged animal that runs races and occasionally wins them. And it's not a cause or effect of horses. It's merely habitually associated, where human beings are the species that by far has the greatest symbolic capacity, which enable us to invent scenarios, fantasies, and so forth that are not restricted by space and time. It gives us a tremendous intellectual advantage. I have published a book about this. It's titled The Evolution of Intelligence, about the emergence of human mentality from its precursors in the animal kingdom, where the mountain gorilla comes the closest to having similar capabilities, because the mountain gorilla possesses both iconic indexical and symbolic mentality, but not to anything like comparable to the human ability. So I trace the emergence of human mind from its precursors in the primate and before that in the animal kingdom. That's what I do. Well, I've spent a lot of time, you know, assessing the computational conception that would model the human mind on a computer and explain why it's defective. What troubles me now about this new approach is basically implanting sensors in the human brain to stimulate nodes and synapses to turn human beings or thinking things into computers. That's the irony. They can't turn a computer, a digital machine, into a human being, a thinking thing, but they can turn a thinking thing into something very much like a computer or a robot. That appears to be the agenda. And then you have everyone thinking the same thoughts, doing the same kind of behavior. If you want to create a social community that is modeled on the social insects, the wasps, the bees, the termites, and so forth, which is, you know, fascinating stuff, but which is all instinctual behavior on the part of those lower species, they don't have the ability to acquire new habits, including mental, by means of symbols. So I think the master agenda is to really create human societies into forms of hives where everyone is obedient worker, like a worker ants and so forth, but where the elite remain aloof and independent, very much as David Icke described, except now in a technological, a very sophisticated version. Meanwhile, among the brilliant blogs you'll find at jamesfetzer.org, Brandon Smith, Waves of Mutilation, Medical Tyranny and the Cashless Society, begins. Back in 2014, during the Ebola scare in the U.S., I published an article warning about how a global pandemic could be used by the elites as cover for the implementation of an economic collapse, as well as martial law measures in Western nations. My immediate concern was the way in which a viral outbreak could be engineered or exploited as a rationale for a level of social control the public would never accept under normal circumstances. And this could be any viral outbreak, not just Ebola. The point is the creation of an invisible enemy that the populace cannot quantify and defend against without constant government oversight would be the objective. The Ebola event 6 years ago seems to have been a dry run for what is happening today. I believe it is entirely deliberate. I'll explain why here. But either way, governments have proven they cannot be trusted to handle the pandemic crisis, nor can they be trusted to protect the people and their freedoms. At the same time, the pandemic itself is tightly intertwined with economic collapse. The two events feed off one another. The pandemic provides perfect cover for the crash of the massive debt bubble central banks and international banks have created over the years. I noted in February that the global economy was crashing long before the coronavirus showed up. At the same time, economic chaos increases third world conditions within each country, which means poor nations and healthcare options that cause more sickness and more deaths from the virus, as outlined in 2014. Who would question the event of an economic collapse in the wake of an Ebola virus-soaked nightmare? Who would want to buy or sell? Who would want to come in contact with strangers to generate a transaction? Who would even leave the house? Ebola viral treatment in first world nations has advantages of finance and a cleaner overall health environment. But what if economic downturn happens simultaneously? America could experience third world status very quickly, and with it, all the unsanitary conditions that result in an exponential Ebola pandemic death rate. Amidst even a moderate or controlled viral scenario, stocks and bonds will undoubtedly crash, a crash that was going to happen anyway. The international banks who created the mess got off blameless, while Ebola viral outbreak, an act of nature, becomes the ultimate scapegoat for every disaster that follows. The wave model of conditioning and control is starting to show up everywhere, and it is most blatant in the intended solution presented by the elites in response to the coronavirus outbreak. As True Stream Media outlined in their excellent video, We Are Living in 12 Monkeys, MIT recently published a paper written by their globalist editor-in-chief, Gideon Litchfield, titled, We're Not Going Back to Normal, which admits quite brazenly how the elites intend to use this crisis to their advantage. Litchfield lays out a kind of programming schedule for the population based on waves of viral infection outbreaks, waves of tight social restriction, followed by waves of limited economic activity and limited calm over the next 18 months. As Litchfield suggests, to stop coronavirus, we'll have to radically change almost everything we do, how we work, exercise, socialize, shop, manage our health, educate our kids, take care of family members. I mean, can you believe the bullshit? We all want things to go back to normal quickly. But what most of us have probably not yet realized, yet will soon, is that things won't go back to normal after a few weeks or even a few months. Some things never will. He continues, as long as someone in the world has the virus, listen to that, as long as someone in the world has the virus, well, someone in the world is always going to have the virus. Outbreaks can and will keep occurring without stringent controls to contain them. In a report yesterday, researchers at Imperial College London, which Bill Gates bought up with massive donations, proposed a way of doing this, imposed more extreme social distancing measures every time admissions to intensive care units start to spike, relax them each time admissions fall. Ultimately, however, I believe that we'll restore the ability to socialize safely by developing more sophisticated ways to identify who is a disease risk and who isn't, and discriminating legally against those who are. Now, here you get Bill Gates' wet dream. One can imagine a world in which you get on a flight. Perhaps you'll have to be signed up to a service that tracks your movements via your phone. The airline wouldn't be able to see where you'd gone, but it would get an alert if you'd been close to known infected people or disease hotspot. There'd be similar requirements at the entrance to large venues, government buildings, or public transportation hubs. There would be temperature scanners everywhere. And your workplace might demand you wear a monitor that tracks your temperature or other vital signs. Where nightclubs ask for proof of age, in future they might ask for proof of immunity. An identity card or some kind of digital verification via your phone showing you've already recovered from or been vaccinated against the latest viral strain. Well, frankly, we don't need the goddamn vaccinations, which cause more damage than good. If you look at it, and I was infuriated by Alan Dershowitz suggesting we don't have a right of defense against mandated vaccinations, who clearly has his head where the sun does not shine. This man is despicable. That's my new name for him, Despicable Dershowitz. Where we have the right of self-defense against threats, we have to provide informed consent that would require informing us all the risks and hazards associated with this medical experiment upon us. It even turns out to have a commercial aspect to it because somebody's got to pay for these vaccinations. All of these are reasons why Dershowitz is completely 100% wrong. It's as though he were even oblivious to the Nuremberg Code, which was developed by the Nuremberg Tribunal in the aftermath of medical experiments being performed on prisoners by Dr. Mengele. I mean, this is absurd. Alan Dershowitz doesn't know the Nuremberg Code. Alan Dershowitz doesn't know the necessity of informed consent, because otherwise it's a crime for you to receive a vaccination without informed consent. And I'm just telling you, this guy Dershowitz, he must have something on him. We know that he was a buddy of Jeffrey Epstein. We know he flew on the Lolita Express. We know he went to Orgy Island. Well, Alan Dershowitz, you've blown it completely. Your name is mud. You have been outed yourself. You are a disgrace. And here we get this guy now in this publication continuing. And there you have it. The social and biometric control that the globalists have been hungry to set up for years has a perfect catalyst, a viral pandemic, which would cycle indefinitely. All that would be needed is to release a designer virus every couple of years, which renews public fear. The populace becomes increasingly dependent on government for everything, as their very survival depends on their ability to function within the new economy and without a special mark granted by government saying you're not an infected risk, you could be shunned from all trade and participation. That's it. That's the vice they're trying to put us into. Refuse to get vaccinated because of health concern, you're kicked out of the economy. Homeschool your children, they have not been monitored and therefore an infection risk. Your whole family's kicked out of the economy. Whole political views that are contrary to globalism. Maybe you are listed as a danger to the system and wrongly labeled, infected as punishment. And then you're kicked out of the economy. The establishment can use a threat of economic removal to condition many people into complacency or slavery. The sheeple. The number to call in, 540-352-4452. I repeat, 540-352-4452. Mitchell, handle your call and get you on the air. I'm waiting to hear from you.
Radio at freedomslips.com. We'll be right back after this message.
Be evasive.
But that doesn't mean that they're telling the truth as opposed to fiction.
And Genesis chapter 6, verse 4, and there were giants in the earth in those days, and also after that, when the sons of God came and unto the daughters of men, indicating that there were giants before the Nephilim.
And sons of God, plural. They weren't talking about Jesus coming down.
That's right. Yeah.
I'm Steve Crawford, host of Factor Theory Live. Join me every Sunday night from 10 p.m. till midnight Eastern Standard Time on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. Check it out.
Hello, my name is Mr. Rowe. I am the host of Reality Extraction. On Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com, I utilize logic, intellect, and magic to methodically autonomize, vivisect, analyze, examine, study, scrutinize, and extract an essence of reality from a fog of illusion and confusion. You can find me on Studio B every Thursday at 1700 hours Pacific Time. That's 8 p.m. Eastern. No topic taboo, no subject too strange. I strive to take a neutral standpoint during the dissection of the topic at hand. That's Reality Extraction with Mr. Rowe on Revolution Radio.
If you think for one second that the Capitol will ever treat us fairly, you are lying to yourselves. Because we know who they are and what they do. This is what they do, and we must fight back. You can torture us and bomb us. Fire is catching. And if we burn, you burn with us.
Good evening.
Are you awake yet? I hope. We've tried and we've tried for years and years to use passive resistance and loud voices to make a change. But time is over. Your governments around the world have no other goal than to decimate your entire existence at the hands of the bankers and the elites. The war is coming, and it's your choice to decide if you want to be a warrior or a victim. Denial is not a choice anymore. Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet. Not giving up. Revolution Radio. All right. Thanks for listening while we took that short break here at Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. And yeah, we're going to get back to your host.
Okay, well, Mitch is telling me of the callers who are standing by. I just want to share with you a comment from James McCanny, whom I so recently featured in relation to the article I was just summarizing and discussing. This is spot on. Exactly what is going on and what will go on. Return to normal? The psychopaths have this bone in their jaws, and this is their one shot. They have also the invisible weapon of dropping more viruses off at any location at will. This is going to get ugly, and as I mentioned on your show, no one is looking for the criminals who did this. I Skype messaged you an article from National Geographic, long since bought up by the New World Order, covering for Fauci, stating he notes there's no evidence the virus started in his baby project in Wuhan. We have a caller from the 510 area code. Please give us your name and your state and join the conversation.
Hi, Dr. Fetzer. This is Danny Sears. How are you doing?
How are you, Danny? I'm pleased to hear from you, my friend. What's up?
Well, I wanted to call and give you an update on a recent event that I've been looking into, and that is the man in Minnesota that was choked by the police. I'm sure
right.
You're familiar.
Right. I actually reported it earlier tonight. Yes, go ahead.
Well, I found some interesting details that I thought I'd share with you if you're interested to hear.
Of course.
Well, we all see the video and the protests and stuff like that, but what we're not seeing is a few interesting anomaly details that I found from the beginning.
Okay.
One of the things that I found right away is I ran the suspect's background in the state of where this happened, okay? And what I found something that's very interesting. Off the top, there's only three people in the entire state that have that name. So it's
What was his name, Danny? I'm trying to look it up in the Wisconsin paper. Go ahead and tell me.
His reported name is George Floyd. George, first name, last name Floyd.
Right.
Okay, but here's the problem. There's only three people in the entire state that have that name. Okay, three.
All right. And?
Yeah, okay. Sound like we got cut off. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, I can hear you, Danny. If you could speak up a little louder, but it's okay.
The sound keeps going off. Hopefully you can hear me okay.
We can hear you.
Okay. So there's three people in the state with that name. The first one that I'll talk about is 105 years old. So we know it's not him.
Probably not our victim. Go ahead.
Right. The second person is 95 years old.
Again. Yep.
Okay. So that only leaves one left, and the one that's left is 35 years old. So I thought, okay, this is him. The only problem is, as we go into the background, his name is reversed. The 35-year-old that actually exists in the database, his name is actually Floyd P. George, middle initial of P.
Okay.
So the name is not George Floyd, it's Floyd George.
Okay.
But here's the problem. When you go through the person's background, you look at their places, property, possessions, criminal record, and also photographs, the suspect of record is not the person they're showing on television.
Okay.
It's not him.
But Danny, tonight I was looking at a lot of footage. I mean, that's one thing that MSNBC, for example, or NBC does reasonably well is cover events like this. Where they had early footage when he was first arrested. He was a real big guy. This guy's at least 6'5", I'd say. And he wasn't being contrary. He wasn't resisting arrest. He was sat down by the wall. He looked totally compliant. And then the other cops showed up, and they took him across the street, which appears to be where the incident occurred. And, of course, I've watched it now a couple of times. And it's just absurd that he keeps his knee on his neck when he's explaining he cannot breathe. I mean, what's this cop do? Think this guy's some kind of Superman that he doesn't need air to live? I mean, I thought it was extremely offensive. And, of course, the chief of police fired the four cops who were involved here outright. I think you're raising an interesting question about his actual identity here. It's a front-page story, actually. A front-page story, the Wisconsin State Journal, officers fired after death.
Well, there's a lot of moving pieces to this. So
yeah.
The first thing I want to start is it's very unusual to fire four officers with no investigation. That never happens. So there's no investigation. There's no way to know what happened before the incident that led up to the incident. There's too many unknowns. That's why there's never a firing before there's even an investigation. If you look at the mayor when he gave a speech the other day, he looks exactly like Robbie Parker. When he starts his speech, he gives a quick sigh, and he looks like he's reading the script as he goes into character. He has a very strange emotion when he's talking. He doesn't look sincere at all. It looks very, very scripted.
How very interesting, Danny. That's really fascinating to compare him to Robbie Parker. Fascinating.
Okay, I lost you, sir. Are you still there?
Yeah. No, I can hear you, Danny. You couldn't hear me. I'm sorry.
Yeah, now I got you. So what I was saying about the mayor, if you look at the mayor and the attorneys, especially the mayor, his speech that he gave for the public looks extremely scripted. He doesn't look genuine. His facial expressions give him away. He looks just like Robbie Parker in Sandy Hook to me.
Well, it's funny, Danny. I mean, I saw him. I thought he looked pretty genuine and sincere. But, you know, I'm glad to have your take on this. Why don't you stay on the line while I bring in a couple of others? Maybe we'll have a conversation here. I see Giuseppe from the District of Criminals is standing by. Join the conversation, my friend.
Hey, Professor. Glad to be able to talk to you. Outstanding tour de force on your first episode of Jim the Conspiracy Guy. Really, I was there. I was the Lumomo Jinganono. That's another one of my emails. I was the one who posted the questions, and great job. And I have a whole bunch of points I'll go through quickly, but it dawned on me when you were reading the article from that fella, Brandon Smith, who's definitely in the ballpark. He just doesn't realize that they've been ramping this up way longer than just the Ebola. You got to go all the way back to the swine flu calamity with the failed virus and go back to SARS-1 and go back to all these lies. And I'm wondering if they put the full force of the Orwellian lies in motion, because the old terrorist of the Muslim or has been defeated in the public space. I mean, Syria beat back these parasites, so the new terrorist is now a virus.
Yeah, the new terrorist is now an invisible enemy, yes.
Yeah, that's just so sick. But now I'd like to go through my points real quick. Number one is, do you remember back in the day when you used to get that big Sunday newspaper with all the ads and they would insert that slick magazine called Parade Magazine that was all full of ads and such?
Yeah, and then it shrank and shrank.
Yes, but The Lancet, the New England Journal of Medicine, all these so-called hallowed publications, they're nothing more than the Parade Magazine for the corporate sophistry of Big Pharma. So they completely do no longer run real science. They just run the science that serves their agenda, which is this insane vaccine BS.
Giuseppe, and, that's so distressing to hear. Anyone who's led an intellectual life or of scholarship, education, teaching would be utterly dismayed by that report. I'm not questioning the report, but rather I'm appalled by its significance.
Oh, my God. My first degree was in journalism. I have over 500 published byline articles when I was a young man in major newspapers and magazines and such. And they're a huge part of the problem. This control is just omnipresent, and it's like a stage four cancer. It's everywhere. And then my next point is why are so many people so scared out of their minds by and don't even bother to look at the data, which is that, you know, the model, the Neil Ferguson model was ridiculous. That guy's a propped up buffoon. And now he's been disgraced, justifiably so.
Yes.
But you know what I wonder, if not what's going on, is that so many people are overwhelmed by the speed of technology and the vastness of information on the internet that they can no longer feel they have any control over their lives. And so what you have is this literal Stockholm syndrome occurring where people want to align with the white coat doctors and the commercials on TV because it makes them feel like they're part of the winning team, and they begin to align with their oppressors. I feel like that's what's going on in the minds of a lot of these people who no longer can critically think, no longer can be their own advocates for their own health.
Yes, yes, yes.
The next point is Hillary Clinton is demonically evil, and I don't know. I mean, I could go on and on, but she just needs to somehow have nature take care of its business, and she gets to pass on to the next level. That would be
Giuseppe.
A
I tell you, I think she still wants to run for president again.
Oh yeah, I totally see them trying to set her up as please Hillary, come and run against Donald with the online convention and all that stuff. Yeah, absolutely, I see that coming too. And then my next point is, do you really think that Trump has given the average person an improved economy? I mean, what I see has been going on since he got in there is an insane wealth transfer under Trump. And he, you know, the way they lie about unemployment, 30% of people no longer even look for jobs. They're not even counted. And then they've got the entire focus in the mass media being how the stock market, the so-called big line, has gone up. But the big line doesn't help me in any way. I look at the grocery cart, which is insane inflation, and I look at buying clothes that I have to shop when things are on sale or off-season clearance stuff to be able to afford things. And then I look even more at the gig economy where people are just driving their cars for Uber and Lyft or delivering food or what have you, have no insurance, no security. And then you look at, for example, there's talk, I recall reading about a year ago or 2 years ago, where the manufacturers in Michigan were lamenting they can't get people to work on the line to build cars and other things because they're offering $17 an hour when you need $35 an hour to have it be a living wage, but they're unwilling to pay a living wage. I believe that is rampant. So I think that much like there's two realities, the the arrogant techno-reality of the big cities and then the suffering reality of the so-called flyover states. And that is exactly what most people, including me, are living, the reality that Trump was essentially Obama. Obama gave all these speeches like he was Martin Luther King Jr. And then, you know, served the Zionist banksters and continued the wealth transfer and destruction of the economy. And then Trump gets in there talking the dog whistle nationalist things, thinking he's going to bring the troops back and everything that got him elected. He didn't deliver on any of it. Well, that's my opinion anyway.
Well, I'm glad to have it. You always express yourself with great eloquence. More. You got a couple more points.
A couple more quick points. Is tying back into all the corona BS. You know, the front page of the New York Times, 100,000 dead. And I bet any amount of money that half of those deaths were just listed as corona, and they're not even corona. For example, that young woman who does a great job on YouTube called Really Graceful, she noticed that the sixth person listed in that list was actually a homicide victim. So it's like,
oh, really?
I bet you. Yeah, absolutely. So that's a massive scam. And then when you quoted Rappaport and Smith, they both are alluding to the same thing, which is there is still no test for the COVID-19 SARS-2. What they're seeing people have is a coronavirus, which is in all of us. So therefore, they could claim we're all infected.
Yes, yes, yes. And I don't know if I presented it last show or not, but it turns out, you know, the mortality table, say in Minnesota, if you look at the distribution of death, it corresponds to the distribution of death without the coronavirus. So I think the coronavirus is what's sometimes called in philosophy an epiphenomenon. It may be present, but it's not making a difference. And if it's not making a difference, it's not causing anybody's death, which means the whole thing is a hoax from beginning to end.
Right. And lastly, because I know there's plenty of other callers, but to augment and perhaps put a different type of spin on the whole idea where you say the vaccines will dumb down the population by 5 points at the minimum.
I was talking about the loss of brain cells from wearing face masks.
Correct, my bad. I think Smith was talking about how it will possibly, you know, cause people to be more obedient. But it popped into my head, what if the whole intent is they're already poisoned and created this growing army of these autistic zombies? And what if now they inject things that can get them to be more efficient workers guided by this nanotech? I mean, what a dark future.
Well, you know, Giuseppe, I think that's why the big pharma has been happy with such a large percentage of our children being autistic. They feel they're easier to control. They're more willing to perform monotonous activities. They make better employees for mass production and routine repetitious behavior.
Right.
It's really disturbing because we had a report that they actually had on the market a product that reversed autism, and pharma made a point of getting rid of it, got it off the market so no one could use it. That's a tragedy all by itself. I would want get that back on the market.
Right. It's called Theramin. And then there's also the peptide T that a woman has been trying to bring to the market for 40 years, and the corrupt FDA has blocked her again and again. And then there's also
Giuseppe,
that a woman has been trying to bring to the market for 40 years, and the Brock FDA
is
applied
to
that nutty. And then you hear that Lou,
take
the peptide
off,
that a woman has been trying to bring to the market
in a
for years, and the Brock FDA is applied to that nutty. And then you hear that Lou,
take
the peptide
seed
that a woman has been trying to bring to the market for years, and
Thank you. Mechanic, standing by. Go ahead. Give us your thoughts.
How you doing, Jim? Thanks for having me. Appreciate
good,
it, man.
Sure.
My thoughts out here. I'm face first with Mother Nature right now. You can probably hear a river behind me. I'll get a little further away from it. But I'm having a good time out here. I find solace out here, as everybody does, I'm sure. My biggest disappointment right now, my biggest disappointment is probably going to be the lack of that constitutional foundation of which the officer of the Constitution was built on. It is now becoming a mockery of such a thing. We have less than a third of the United States where a heavy presence of sheriffs and their deputies have come out against the unconstitutional orders of their governors and their mayors, city officials. Of course, these places are expected to happen like that in California, where I'm at. My sheriff isn't enforcing any of these things. In fact, the irony here is that the sheriff and the police department have told the town to open. And the town is, it succumbed to brainwashing on the behalf of the medical officer.
Which town is it, Mechanic? I guess
if you're going to get on the air, right, this is the time, right? This is the moment of truth, right? It's Mono County, Jim. It's Mono County, and it's a joke. This guy is a complete joke. Back in the mid-80s, the AIDS epidemic, this guy's down there with Fauci. He's down there with, early Gates. He's down there, and he's a part of the CDC. And he's a bum. He's a crook.
This has been long in the works, and they went out of their way to get the right people in the right positions to attempt to pull this off. Why don't you stand by, Mechanic, while I bring in Paul. Paul, go ahead. Join the conversation.
All right. Yes, sir. Position number four in baseball, I think that's known as cleanup. Thank you very much for having me on. I can cancel my therapy appointment for later in the week. before I comment briefly on our very astute caller, Daniel, from the 510, I'd like to remind everybody
Danny.
We have to...
Yeah,
Danny. Okay, so he made some observations I want to comment on. And before I do that, what the hell's going on with Giuseppe? Could he be like a cyborg? You guys remember the movie Alien and Aliens? The both of them were the cyborg. Oh my God! What the hell?
There was some kind of feedback loop there having to do with Skype, Paul. I mean, it just got back. I mean, I had detected it immediately. Go ahead, give us your thoughts.
I don't know. Yeah, but here's what I wanted to say is I'd like to remind everybody that we have to fight for our rights. And I want to have somebody else say it a little bit better than me. So if you'll indulge me for 30 to 40 seconds, I think that we're going to put some emphasis behind this. Here we go.
Go ahead.
You got to fight for your rights.
Okay.
So who was that?
That's the well-known thing from the 80s. That's the Beastie Boys.
The DC Boys?
I'm sure a lot of the younger members know the tune. I could go on. It's some good, hard-driving rock and roll. The only thing the audience missed was me contorting and convulsing to the beat, maybe another time. What I wanted to mention about what Danny was talking about is this is exactly the kind of thing that Miles Mathis does. I don't know if he's familiar with his work, but he goes right away into looking up the names of these people involved to see if they have any real internet presence, if they are indeed real, if they are messed with, what their background is. So we have to be on guard because even though we all know that a lot of cops are assholes and a lot of cops do not know when to quit, they don't have a governor on themselves. So there's been enough real incidents for us to be mad, no matter what the race is, for us to be really upset with the police. But in these times that we're in now, we have to be on guard. I wrote a comment on another site about this thing in Georgia, the Armed Arbery, And I said, actually, I could read the comment. I won't, but it's very good. And essentially, what I covered in it was a couple of things. Number one,
How long is the comment, Paul?
It's a couple of paragraphs, and it's excellent. I'm not going to read it. I'm going to summarize it. But here's what I noted. One, that the cell phone footage was cropped. Okay, it was vertically cropped, which is odd. I've seen plenty of cell phone footage online, and I've never seen anything vertically cropped like that. Number two was he never goes backwards at any time, and he supposedly sustained two shotgun blasts, one to the abdomen, and he never moves backward the whole time, not even an inch, and that goes against the laws of physics. And he was only, supposedly, he was only about a 175-pound individual. So, you know, I don't know of any shotgun in the world that wouldn't move a person of that size backwards, and he never goes back.
Okay, I know the shooting in Georgia, right, with a pickup truck and the two guys, one of them, I think, was a retired cop or something.
Right. See, now that in of itself is suspicious because, yes, he not only was a retired cop, but he was also an investigator with the DA's office. But here's the other interesting point that I got from another commenter on another site. And what he said is essentially there's pretty much no jurisdiction in America that video wouldn't be evidence in a capital crime and it would not be allowed to be released. And I thought that was very interesting, you know, because here you have a murder or a potential murder, and this video would be evidence. And there isn't any, like I said, there isn't any jurisdiction where that wouldn't, you know, be deemed to be something that would not be released to the public.
Well, that's before the authorities knew it even existed, which is what I suspect happened here.
Possibly.
Go ahead.
It's just things to be suspicious of. And I wish we could tweak this narrative on this whole COVID thing to back what I first said, and you remember it, and I have the archive somewhere. A month and a half or more ago when I called it a snipe hunt. And the pertinent part of that observation is what? That the snipe doesn't really exist. The whole purpose of a snipe hunt is to get somebody to believe it. And I don't know if anybody actually experienced this, but I was in the Boy Scouts, and we did it a few times.
I know about it. Discerning of you. That was very discerning. I like it.
Okay, so here, let me further that out, and I'll leave it alone, because I am actually going to suggest to you later that you might, you know, want to have me on another show, because you and I could spend the first hour. I've done a lot of work now, a lot of research. I have a lot of sources, and I'm going to question the idea that the virus, as they want us to believe it is, actually exists, and it's not what they want us to think it is. I personally believe, based upon what I've looked into, is that there's only bacteria and other microorganisms and fungus, and that what they're calling a virus is nothing more than cellular debris and broken up other microorganisms.
Okay.
Because, number one, it doesn't make any sense. This idea of this thing, which they claim, they admit, okay, that it doesn't have respiration, it doesn't excrete anything or consume anything, it lacks motility. Yeah. In fact, in several definitions, they use the word inert. So, of course, I went and I looked up the word inert just to get a clear definition, and it's lacking the power to move, okay? And it doesn't have sexual or asexual reproduction. But supposedly, somehow, it goes in other people's bodies, and it, quote, hijacks the machinery of the cell to replicate itself. And there's a number of people, it's not just me talking, but that's, in my opinion, that's good enough. But there's a number of people that have questioned the idea of, like, how exactly does this happen, and what proof do they have? And the fact of the matter is more than one person claims that there is no proof. And if you watch, I'm almost done. If you watched any of that video I sent you by Stefan Lanka, and I can't recommend it enough, and please watch it, because you need to be, completely caught up. He makes the contention, which he backs up, that says nobody has ever proved that a virus causes disease. And I actually spent 4 hours looking on the other day, just typing in those terms and looking around, and I couldn't find any either. So wouldn't you expect, if you're a logic professor and using any kind of logic you want, including inverse logic, if this virus exists and if the virus is supposedly an infectious agent, then what you would expect to find is some sort of confirmation hypothesis, experimentation, repetition, that a virus has been shown and proved before, been isolated, been cultured, been concentrated,
Paul,
introduced
Paul,
into a test.
Paul, you've made your point, okay? I don't dispute the existence of viruses as you're doing here, but I have three other callers, okay, I want to bring in. So I'm glad you made your points. Caller from the 817 area code, please give us your name and your state and join the conversation.
Thanks, Jim. It's Mark in Texas.
Oh, hey, Mark. How are you doing?
Good. Hey, happy Memorial Day. Thank you for your service, sir.
Thank you.
Just to follow on Giuseppe's comment, one thing, and his excellent points, I was just thinking that one of the reasons for this, we have the drive-through restaurants, the drive-through banks, is to usher in robots. And Tex Mars wrote one of the first books on robots, Robot Alchemy. And I'm just really concerned that this is a way to get rid of, you know, gosh, a huge chunk of the workforce, and wanted to see what Giuseppe thought.
Well, we'll see if we get him back, Mark. But I mean, he got caught in a loop. We were getting endless repetitions of the same few sentences he was making, so I had to take him off to get rid of the loop.
All right. Well, I get nervous when I talk, so I'll just hang up and listen. But anyway, love your show, Jim.
Okay, Giuseppe's here to answer you, Mark. Go ahead, Giuseppe.
Now, what was his question? I kind of talked over it.
I heard the loop. What I was saying is, I think one of the reasons for this could be to usher in robots. I mean, we've got all the restaurants, the drive-through, the banks, or drive-through.
Mark, I can answer that better than Giuseppe. No, it's try to turn people into robots, okay?
All right. That's
really what they're doing here with this nanotechnology. Dave from Minnesota is here. Dave, go ahead. Give us your thoughts, especially from Minnesota.
Well, I'll tell you this, that the mayor is a tribe member, so that should tell you something. I just, you know, Minneapolis police are I've lived in other cities, and these guys typically are not thugs. I mean, they're pretty decent as a whole. I haven't had a lot of experience with them, but you don't have any problems like this. But there's more outrage over this than when the Somali police officer shot that white Australian girl. I don't know if you remember that a few years ago, but there's so many Somalians in South Minneapolis that they have their own
enclave
force. Yeah, exactly. No, they have the police. They have their own police force.
Oh, do they really? Yeah.
Yes, yes. So it's a friggin' mess, and I think it's staged. I agree with Danny. I think
it's staged.
Yeah, there's something that stinks about it. It really does.
What's the idea? What's the idea behind it?
Well, they want to split us up. I think that everybody, all races, were unifying against this corona hoax. And people are getting pissed off, so they need something to, you know, split the masses, and that's what they're good at. So. That's my theory.
Danny, do you hear what Dave is saying? Are you still here, Danny? Do you want to comment on that?
Here, I'm here. Dr. Fetzer, I look at it as a distraction story. There were several, in the days when this came out, there were several, not one.
Go ahead.
Voter for breaking, that there were actually arrests and convictions, so just accusations. While that was happening, he had Richard Grenell declassing, and on the way out, he broke more Russia declass that was hitting the network. And all of this was coming to a crescendo, and any time they start getting pounded on a subject, in other words, the deep state, when they start losing, the first thing they do is dig up a distraction. They have these incidences already loaded in a can, and they simply...
Well, this was a nasty one.
Dan, you're
being intercepted or broken up, bad connection, whatever. Go ahead, say a little more.
The police, the uniforms don't look right. The police cars say police license plates don't match any mechanisms. If you watch the video, I just saw you the long version that make no sense.
Thank you. Thank you, Danny. We have another caller standing by, Beastie. Beastie, go ahead and join the conversation. Beastie. No Beastie?
Oh, no, Jim. That's the Beastie Boys. That's the group that you were trying to think that Jim Paul had.
Thank you, Mitchell. Thank you. Mitchell, we're so glad to have you back, by the way. Why don't you add a few words of your own? We're just so relieved you're okay.
Well, let's see. We had rain for about 4 or 5 days, and my internet DSL line got evidently got water in it. And, well, if you didn't know, tropical storm, is it Bertha? Oh, I think it's Bertha is coming up through North Carolina right now.
And right now.
We're getting ready to get kind of flooded out again. So hopefully I won't lose it again.
Oh, that's just great. That's just great. Just when I get you back, you're going to be flooded out again, man. I'm just so relieved you're alive and well. I was really worried. Let me see. Giuseppe, let's go back to you for a few more thoughts.
Oh, yeah, I'm here. Another possibility that Mark from Texas was alluding to is, are you familiar with, I'm sure you are, the insane path being pushed by Ray Kurzweil, where humans merge with technology into something called the singularity?
I don't really know it, but that doesn't sound very promising to me, frankly. But...
No, right. It's he's one of the so-called deep thinkers for Google, so that tells you how worthwhile that is. But
wow,
the basic premise is these arrogant technocrats want to live forever in a virtual reality. So they're trying to get things. Another possible reason why Gates vaccines are include the nanoparticles. So,
yes.
And to address Paul's idea, the if you go by the work of he's describing and the woman whose book I ordered upon his recommendation, Turner, and the Dr. Andrew Kaufman, what they call a virus, I don't think they have it right, but there's definitely something. I mean, what they see a lot of times is a parasite, you know, like the coronavirus is an obligate parasite. It can't move on its own. Like you said, it doesn't reproduce. But there's been something like I'm also trained in Oriental medicine. Even before the Taoist priest who created Oriental medicine 6,000 years ago, they didn't know what was causing it, but they would call it like a wind heat invasion if your sinuses were – you're blowing – yellow snot, and if you were shivering and blowing clear snot, it was a wind cold invasion. So something invades the body, and something causes disease. But I mean,
right. Yeah,
I mean, when you start to read these things about no the Koch's postulate has never been fulfilled, it really blows your mind.
Yeah, what? So I'd like to engage Giuseppe with this too, including asking him a couple of questions. Okay, so, by the way, Giuseppe, yeah, nice call on Kurzweil. I'm very familiar with it. And as a matter of fact, I think, Jim, you may do well to be a little bit more familiar, because for many, many years he's been talking about this. And, of course, he's one of the tribe, and he's one of these people connected with all these others in the dark state, the deep state. They want to merge humanity with technology, okay? It's their stated goal. So along those lines, I'll read briefly a quote from Rudolf Steiner, who was an interesting fellow. Agree or disagree with some of his more wacky ideas, but Rudolf Steiner was clearly a visionary. And here's what it says, essentially. Almost a century ago, Austrian philosopher Rudolf Steiner warned of a vaccine, an anti-religious vaccine, which will inoculate people against having a soul, an anti-spiritual vaccine that will ensure the success of dark spirits in completely materializing the human race. Now, here's the quote. It's very interesting. Steiner himself wrote, I have told you before of the spirits of darkness that are going to inspire human hosts in whom they might be dwelling to find a vaccine which will drive all inclination towards spirituality out of people's souls, and this will happen in a roundabout way through the living body. Today, bodies are vaccinated against one thing or another. In the future, children will be vaccinated with a substance which will certainly be possible to produce that will make them immune as to not develop so foolish inclinations connected with spiritual life. and so on. So that's quite, how should we say, prescient, nearly 100
Paul, that's,
years ago.
That's probably a conversation for another day, but well, I'm glad you brought it up. Let me see here. Dave from Minneapolis. Dave, go ahead. Get back.
I don't know if you guys remember this. When this scandemic first started, they said they were going to concentrate on the major metro areas and then later hit the rural areas as far as testing and that sort of thing. I've heard that in some of the really smaller communities, like maybe less than 100 people in the town, that the National Guard is actually going house to house and doing testing.
Where?
I'd rather not say. It's in the Midwest. Let's just say that. It's not.
What are you afraid of saying it for?
Because I know the people that are doing it. I just don't want it to.
So what?
Okay.
I'm sorry.
Hey, we got Bill.
Sorry, this
joined us. Bill, go ahead. Join the conversation.
Yeah. Hey, guys, and welcome back, Mitch. As you know, I'm kind of covered by Bertha right now. I haven't seen the sun, and I honestly don't know if it's been a month or only 2 weeks. It's just so you guys know. But all right. First of all, imagine RoboCops stepping on your neck instead of an actual cop. Second of all, manslaughter charges sound nice to me. I wouldn't say murder, although if an investigation were to prove that it was a setup designed to hope that that accident would happen, then it would be murder. But obviously, abuse of power would have to be thrown in there, misuse of power and so on for maybe both police. The second cop would be like an accomplice, not the murderer. Not a manslaughter charge, but still a hefty charge. But I did want to add, beehives have always been, queens, kings, and emperors have always been enamored and fascinated by beehives and the modeling of that. That's why they call it the hex on the worker, like us, which is, hexagon.
Yeah.
And, but also to jump to... the issue of lack of oxygen with the masks. Now, remember, what did it take to get people? It took ignorant, compliant, low IQ people that are easily angered and easily feared by the news. So those low IQ people were easily scared into taking a mask. But first of all, what does fear itself do? Fear itself restricts the brain. It shuts brain function down. It actually lowers oxygen also. So that further lowers the IQ. And so then because they have a low IQ, they're scared. Then their IQ is even lower. Then they put the mask on. That lowers oxygen even more. Okay, then that makes them even stupider. Then they get even scared into taking the vaccine. That does physical damage to body and brain, and the cycle continues. So I wanted to add that, and basically micro and nanotech combinations, remember, they do not have to take over the complete brain to control your body. All they have to do is disconnect your muscles from your brain or your motor cortex, take over your motor cortex, or just put implants right where that control your muscle altogether. They don't need anything else. And another issue. The God voice is what I keep forgetting to say. Now, in the future, one of the plans was to trick everyone into the part of the New World religion issue. After everyone gets implanted and they get 5G and they get the voice of God to be put in your head, they'll one day have everyone suddenly hear the voice of God, and major things are happening there.
Incredibly stupid, isn't it? We have another caller here from 805 area code. Please give us your name and state and join the conversation.
Hi, my name's Chase from California.
Yeah.
And I just want to say thank you, Mr. Fetzer. I started listening to you first on Jeff Rentz's radio show years ago, and I since gravitated from Rentz Radio and just listened to you three times a week. I wanted to first say that I was watching Judy Mikovits because of somebody. I'm not sure if it was Giuseppe or not, but somebody mentioned her. So she just mentioned in an interview a couple of days ago that she said 50 million will die with this RNA vaccine. And the person that was giving the interview, he said, oh, 15? She says, no, 50. And, I mean, that made me stop and pause. It made the interviewer stop, too. I just want to know, have you heard anything about that by chance? Or any?
No, I haven't heard it, but I'd be glad to have Giuseppe comment. Giuseppe, have you heard people talk about 50 million dying from this new experimental vaccine? I know
yes.
The one that Fauci and Gates have been promoted had a 20% severe, I think it may have been a death rate, but they weren't admitting they wouldn't let their raw data. It was some god-awful.
Yeah, well, and she, in just a private text, she actually thinks the number is even higher. So what occurs whenever you try to, with present level of technology, rewrite the RNA, at first you start to build up a slight improvement in the immunity to the original corona, in this case COVID-19 SARS-2. But what happens is then when that mutates, you have catastrophic reaction, the so-called cytokine storm, where your entire body just erupts in inflammation, and that's what kills you. And it will just be insanely prevalent.
That doesn't sound very good. That doesn't sound very promising. We got Brew joining us, too. Brew, go ahead. Join the conversation.
Yeah, it's guesstimated that over half of these alleged COVID or coronavirus deaths in the United States since this incident began are actually taking place in the nursing homes, where they've actually taken, in certain states like New York, and taken people that they diagnosed with some sort of coronavirus or pneumonia or whatever other ailment and put them right next to, in their face, of these old folks' homes, these retirement homes, and pretty much got them sick and died. And then we have other reports of inside these nursing homes where they had just teams of some hit squad giving them injections. And then shortly after those injections, whether it be the same day or a couple days later, they're dead. So essentially we had pretty much mass murder, a mass sacrifice, a mass Luciferian uptake here. That's what we're looking at there.
Yeah.
Let me spin on this, this Minnesota incident. I'm glad they brought up that girl from Australia. Nobody was bringing that up. I kept thinking, wasn't that Minnesota where the Australian girl was shot, killed by that Somali dude? They wouldn't do anything about it. Just buried it, you know. But yeah, I mean,
they prosecuted the cop. He did get prosecuted for that.
Yeah, but they were very hesitant on it. They were putting him back to work and saying, you know, making all sorts of excuses. But anyway, I'm glad somebody brought it up. What's that?
He wasn't fired right away. He was kept on administrative leave.
Yeah, and that brings me to this point where they, like, four of the police officers involved in the incident were fired the next day. Well, listen, they'd never fire any of these police officers. They always put on paid leave and administrative duty, something. They keep them on it because they got a police union. They got the, whatever you call them, the FOP. They never fire them. They're not allowed to fire them. They have their... immediately, they get the FOP that defends them. They get the point of quarter lawyer or the old lawyer from the FOP. And whatever happens, I'm an administrative lead at best or paid leave or whatever, desk duty, something. They never fire them. So that's a giveaway that whoever mentioned that earlier.
Well, it's in the paper everywhere and all the reports, Bruce.
Yeah.
So.
Well, Jim, you are the conspiracy guy. Sandy Hook, Parkland, Las Vegas. Come on. Come on, dude. I just put one over on you, Jim.
I'm just saying they're claiming it was being fired all everywhere. You know, I'm not disputing you.
Listen, audience, when we got Jim Fetzer going, it looks real to me. I don't know what to think about it. We got a problem here. We got a problem.
Well, I saw the guy with it. It looked like it was a real induced death, manslaughter. I agree with Dave. That's the way it looked to me, like a manslaughter. So I'm surprised that it may be staged. I mean, you know, you and Danny and others here are very worthy, you know, and astute and make a lots of accurate and discerning observations. So, I mean, I'm just offering my tentative, but this is not my final conclusion.
Jim, you know,
on first consideration is one of the reasons we have these conversations, right? To sort of
Jim, you know, Jim, you know if Tulsi Gabbard was president, none of this would ever happen. Someone else, go ahead.
Tulsi Gabbard's probably a man, by the way.
I know that was supposed to be peaceful. I do like Tulsi, but you know, she sort of disappeared off of the news anyway.
You know what? I saw a series of photos and some comparisons the other day, and she definitely got some masculine features to her face and her head. So you can say that all you want.
Michelle Obama and this Melinda Gates. Those are guys. I don't have any doubt about it.
Hey, actually, I do have one more thing to add.
Yeah, go ahead, Bruce.
Okay, so, you know, I brought this up on this broadcast and probably some others, like what really happened and so on and so forth, that the American Medical Association, which is supposed to be the official, the golden of all rules medical association, had said that healthy people should not be wearing masks.
Yeah.
Healthy people, it doesn't do them any good to wear masks.
Yeah.
So this is the official scripture of the AMA. But now you got, as of yesterday, Governor Northam of Virginia saying if you're going to go out to the public, around restaurants, anything outside, yeah, it's mandatory you wear masks. And then they're also saying that they're re-upping this on other states. Other states are now doubling down. They say we're reopening and we're doing this and that, but you know what? It's mandatory you wear masks. Now, they're going against all common sense, especially the AMA. You know what this is symbolism of? Your symbolism of muzzle yourself. You're a slave.
Right.
You're our slave. You're a clown. We're making fun of you.
Worked up, my friend.
Okay, so
I want
Bruce,
to come
so,
back
so
to area code 805. It was very nice of you to call in and say those things. Yeah, Jeff and I had a appalling out. I mean, you know, it's very funny. There it goes. But I'm glad you called in, and I appreciate your remarks. Is there anything else you'd like to add?
Yes, Mr. Fetzer. I noticed that doing some research, I found that there was something called a COVID pass. I'm not sure if you've touched on that before, but it's a biometric. It's supposed to keep, I guess they're marketing it as keeping all of your information in one app. I guess you can download it in on your smartphone. They're saying also that if you don't have a smartphone, no problem. We'll provide you a fob. But it says the world's most secure digital health passport built on patented technology awarded by the Seal of Excellence. And you see a big Theresa May write-up. Basically, they're making it seem like you have to get this, keep this with you at all times, and they're marketing it as a digital currency, as your vaccination check. It even turns different colors when you need to get a vaccination. It's called COVID Pass.
Fascinating. That's good stuff. Yeah. This is part of their ultimate objective and why we're going through all this happy horse shit, to get us to have one of these little apps or right in our bloodstream, you know, a nanotechnology injected by a vaccine you don't need, you don't want, that will only cause you harm. And I reiterate, Dershowitz can rot in hell. I'm so disgusted with Dershowitz.
Please, Jim, we don't want to hear about Dershowitz anymore. He's irrelevant. We don't care about him. The only reason he would even be an interview is because the other guy, Jason Goodman, is also a tribe member. I bet the average goy could have not got an interview with Dershowitz. And who fucking cares what he says? I'm sorry.
All right, Paul. Real quick. Yeah, Danny.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I was just going to say, you know, I listened to Dave from X22. He makes good points. He's been tracking this COVID thing. He calls the new mask push by the Democrats, he calls it the mask shaming phase. He said all the Democrats in the Democrat states have moved lockstep at the exact time to push the mask shaming phase of the COVID scam to keep the thing going because it's failing. And if you notice, it seems like every Democrat state at the same time is all of a sudden coming out with this mask shaming, like how dare you not wear a mask when we tell you to wear one.
Well, the hell with them. You can go to my blog. Dr. Blaylock has a wonderful piece about all the reasons why wearing a mask is harmful. None of them are good. They're all bad. Basically, if you're not sick, you shouldn't be wearing a mask. That's the bottom line. It does you a lot of harm. And I think the Democrats have overplayed their hand, and they're going to go down very, very big in November. It's going to be a disaster, the proportions of which they cannot imagine.
There's been several news crews that have been catching live footage, particularly in Southern California, where the reporter will have a mask on, but then all of a sudden somebody will take photographs or video, and the camera crew, the light gaffer, and everybody else is not wearing a mask.
Let me get Bill Brandt back in here. Bill, I know you got some more you want.
And I'll be quick. All right, first of all, the other caller was partially right. You're both right about the robot turning. People are being turned into robots, but they are replacing humans with robots for, like, drive-thrus and restaurants in particular. That is true. But I have a campaign, more or less, I call Back in Blue, and I want all police to never be allowed to wear black. And it's very psychologically it's a long story to explain, but it's definitely true that they need to be in the color blue. Okay, Jim, I am actually more, I believe the manslaughter we witnessed actually was real. Okay, I'm subject to change in the future, but I lean towards that being natural.
Me
That's
too.
My view.
I think you and I are pretty much in the same place here. Go ahead.
Yeah. That's it, and thank you very much. Have a night.
Good stuff, Bill. Good stuff.
Thank you.
Paul, I know you're dying to get the last word in.
Oh, well, okay, so not necessarily the last word, but just be careful on this mandatory stuff. I wanted to address that because I experienced this in my own county. I almost had a guy want to fist fight me in a restaurant last Thursday. It's a story we're telling another time, but he stepped up on me with his fist clenched and basically said, "Put a mask on, buddy," after I had already told the security guard, which was the third time I had to tell somebody that I don't have to wear one and I'm not going to. But here's the thing. I looked up on the website, and it's a recommendation. Now, the city council here is going to meet June 2nd to decide if they want to make it an order. But in most jurisdictions, they don't have the power to compel you, so they'll make a directive or a recommendation. Right. But it doesn't have the power of law, code, or statute. So be careful.
We're getting some judges ruling that local health authorities have overstepped their bounds. It happened in a county in Illinois, though I don't think the whole state has yet been taken the task.
Right.
You're right, Paul. Right. All this is overreaching. It's unconstitutional. That's the problem between the time that an unconstitutional order is issued and it makes its way through the court, which can take quite a long time, expensive, time-consuming, that the damage is done in the meanwhile. I thought you guys were just wonderful. I thought the calls tonight were just super, one and all. I'm really pleased you all called in. And I guess we're making up some lost ground. I'm so glad to have Mitchell back here. And I have a special guest for you on Friday, 2 days hence. So looking forward to it. Any last words, anyone?
Hey, thank you, Paul.
Thank you all for being here. Great call. And thanks to everyone out there. Thank you all for listening.
Thank you for listening to Revolution Radio.
This is the people's war. It is our war. We are the fighters. Fight it then. Fight it with all that is in us. And may God defend the right.
Warning, warning.
We've got to stop them. They're going to kill us all.
See how the trouble you've started?
Be they the government, be they industry, be they organized labor, be they anyone or human being.
Time when the operation of the machine becomes so odious, makes you so sick at heart that you can't take part, you can't even passively take part, and you've got to put your bodies upon the gears and upon the wheels, upon the levers, upon all the apparatus, and you've got to make it stop, and you've got to indicate to the people who run it, to the people who own it, that unless you're free, the machine will be prevented from working at all.
Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported talk radio station, throwing ourselves upon the gears of the machine. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
You called down the thunder, well now you've got it.
Right. You tell them I'm coming, and hell's coming with me, you hear?
Revolution Radio.
Hello, my name is Mr. Rowe. I am the host of Reality Extraction on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. I utilize logic, intellect, and magic to methodically autonomize, vivisect, analyze, examine, study, scrutinize, and extract an essence of reality from a fog of illusion and confusion. You can find me on Studio B every Thursday at 1700 hours Pacific Time. That's 8 p.m. Eastern. No topic taboo, no subject too strange.